Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to the Euro Clutch. I'm Ian Hamilton, and this may be an episode to skip if you're of a mind that progress can't do any wrong. Yep, this past weekend was Super Strong Style 16, and yep, first Monday in May is Bank Holiday in the UK, so is the last, and typically that's where Super Strong Style has been falling since its inception in 2015. This year was the first time that Super Strong Style aired live on Triller, so a lot more eyeballs on it, and yeah, it was pretty much a show of two halves. Sunday good, Monday maybe not so good, for various different reasons. Sunday's show felt like a very breezy watch, every match apart from the Women's World Title main event touching 15 minutes. Monday's, while didn't have as many matches north of 15 minutes, just felt like a slog, and the format there was probably the reason. Of course, you're doing a 16-man tournament there, so you're looking at, 15 matches there alone. Sunday being the 8 first-round matches and the Women's World Title main event kind of all fit in together. Monday's finals night, though, complete opposite. Starting the 4 quarterfinals, then the men's world title match, the 2 semi-finals, a battle royal, and the main event. It was a drain. I think not so much because you had the same people, I mean, the final man like Therese Leon Slater, you saw work 3 times one night, but just the house style. Live, I could guess it would have been a completely entertaining show, but on the stream, I was just worn out by the end of the semi-finals. But before I go into the rant about the progress package, so to speak, we'll not go into every result, but the final, of course, was won by Man Like Dries after a pretty decent final against Leon Slater. Now, they had built a fair amount of this up, at least on the shows. Man Like Dries beat Shelton Benjamin, or Benjamin Shelton if you're Hulk Hogan, on last year's Super Strong Style, and not so much of any mention made of it since. This year, Dries comes out with bleach blonde hair. He's the new Britres gold standard. Progress's best bout machine. Don't know if he wrestled Kenny Omega somewhere where it didn't make a tape, but hey-ho. But, of course, the final against Leon was the explosion of boisterous behaviour. A team that's had exactly 4 matches in progress and about 20 others outside. So, for a team that people know, but they're not exactly like the Mega Powers or, any other long-standing team finally going face-to-face. It was manufactured, for want of a better word, but yeah, like I say, across the 2 shows, in-ring, pretty solid, nothing was absolutely terrible, apart from the Battle Royal, which I'll touch on in a moment. There was one late change on the Sunday opening show, so we went through the tournament brackets on last week's episode. One of the matches they drew was Trent Seven against Charles Crowley. Charles Crowley pulled out at Showtime. Now, about a week or two earlier, I want to say, he had been advertised for Wrestle Carnival in Coventry, pulled out of that, citing neck surgery. Now, Crowley did work for OTT over in Ireland the night before. Now, I think, okay, well, what gives? We don't know what kind of surgery, but I understand it's minor and elective, so not like, neck spinal fusion or anything like that. But the fact that it came to bell time, Charles Crowley out in his gear, pulling out. Gene Money took his place. We'll get that match later. Elsewhere, we had the two NOAH lads, Jack Morris and Masakita Mia. Now, they, of course, worked the Sumo Hall show on Saturday in Tokyo, hopped straight onto the plane, got straight into London. They were the last of the two opening round matches on the Sunday. Masakita Mia basically squashing Tate Mayfair in 5 minutes. Jack Morris losing to Leon in 7 minutes. Now, I do wonder, you know, if those two lads weren't on the NOAH show on the Saturday, would they have been in longer matches? Because, put this on the picture, you're a NOAH fan. You've bought a ticket just to see them. Hell, they were the first two names announced for the tournament. I can only do one of two shows. I'll do the Saturday. I'll do the Sunday, even. And their two matches don't even last 15 minutes combined. I'd feel a little bit cheated. Of course, no circumstances, you know, unavoidable. But still, when you're doing this format, you'd kind of hope that the big name imports, as you position them to be, get a little bit longer. But not the case. Night one main evented with that Rio versus Nina Samuels match. Rio's Progress Korea against Nina Samuels World Women's Championship. The special guest referee ended up being Kanji, back from a several month absence in Progress. He did have some silliness. It did lead to Rio regaining Women's World title, which she lost back in November. Hindsight being 2020, you can probably surmise that Rio only lost the belt so that she could take on and lose to Maiko Satomura in that final Progress of the final UK singles match of Maiko, without people going after, doesn't Maiko have a title shot now? Next night, on the Monday of Super Strong Style, we had the Nina Samuels promo that ended with Kanji being called out, and they've set up for a Korea versus Korea in Progress match. Back-to-back loser leave town stipulations? Someone here's got a big fetish for, you know, making people redundant, is all I can say. As for the rest of night two, Luke Jacobs retained that Progress men's world title by the skin of his teeth with the old Bret Hart finish, rolling back on a rear naked choke to force a pin because Karen Rao wouldn't let go. I don't know. I mean, I can see people, you know, seeing that as, you know, Karen Rao not looking good coming out of that, but it was a decent match, went way long past its proverbial peak. And yeah, the one thing I do have to say is both RevPro and Progress have had Luke Jacobs as world champion. And there's just something about that just does not seem to be clicking. I don't know whether it's the lack of big-name opponents, the way the presentation's gone. I mean, here at the ballroom, Luke was doing the Dead or Alive cowboy entrance like he had at the Copper Box. That seems to be the, you know, the big party piece. But next for Luke Jacobs will be Man Like Darius because, of course, Darius won Super Strong Style 16. Pretty sure someone must have called a 16-carat gold by accident, hey-ho. But, yeah. Out of the rest of the quarterfinals, we had nothing go under 10 minutes unless you want to tack on the crowd brawling in the Michael Oku Trent 7 sprint. Stretching on to the semi-finals, you had Charlie Sterling lose to Darius in 7 minutes, Leon Slater beating Oku in 15 minutes. Your second quote-unquote buffer match was a battle royal. Hey, do you remember when they used to do the Wasteman Challenge? You know, Roy Johnson, you know, the guys who went out in round one and a few of the names and faces. Roy's not around these parts anymore. I think he's not even been in Progress for 3 years since, was it the, you know, Everything Pattern show that ends up now being a purpose-run show. So now you end up with just a bog-standard battle royal with everyone who was eliminated night one. Main spot in this was Simon Miller clinging on for grim death after being thrown on the top, over the top rope. Every man, their dog, even the crowd, trying to help pull him down off the apron to the floor. It was ridiculous and, you know, ends up with Miller winning the match, saying he wants to go back after his Proteus belt that Paul Walter Hauser won over at WrestleMania weekend. And, yeah, I ate a little bit longer in the process because, yeah, that match me just absolutely not my cup of tea. But, yeah, some of the bits about Super Strong Style 16, of course, was not an in-depth review, just, you know, passing thoughts. After we draw last week, they did put out a graphic for the tournament with the bracketing. Pretty standard. People called out pretty quickly that there was some rather conspicuous shading in that, like some of the tournament bracket spots were brown, others were yellow, and people kind of, you know, fancy-booked, oh, Marcus Mathers, Jack Morris in the final? I mean, they would have to have absolutely lost their mind about it. Of course, Mathers and Morris went out night one. There was another surprise announced over the weekend, obviously not being Mavis and Morris in the final. Progress doing a Women's Super Strong Style. They announced this after Rio regained the Women's World title, and the one thing that jumped out to me at first was, Super strong style, not 16. Now, that might be me just being a little bit pedantic, but going in, the whole push from some fans was kind of led by Charlie Evans wanting to be involved in the tournament. You know, there was a very obvious disappointment from Charlie's end when the last spot was named, when, you know, and Charles Crowley pulled out, she didn't get the spot. And let's be frank, Progress Super Strong Style 16 has always been a men's only tournament. You know, unlike, say, 16 Karat Gold in recent years, it hasn't been intergender. Progress, of course, have done intergender, but for whatever reason, they've decided to stick rigidly within their divisions this time. And, of course, announcing the Women's Super Strong Style kind of feels either this was the plan all along, or a massive overreaction going the other way. But, yeah, maybe not the announcement people wanted. I mean, you had fans wanting to see, you know, Charlie Evans as, you know, the first step into this, and to ignore all that and then go, hey, we're having a Women's Super Strong Style. I get what they're going for, but again, optics, not exactly Progress's strong suit at the moment. But yeah, said Super Strong Style, but no number. And the cynic in me is just thinking, how on earth is this going to go? Like, are you going to do a Men's Super Strong Style weekend and a Women's Super Strong Style weekend? People who were at the ballroom this weekend noted that the crowds didn't look that healthy. I know cage matches saying around about 600, but maybe half that, you know, if you're being charitable in some cases. And also, you know, the fact that Progress don't, like, London Wrestling doesn't have a smaller venue. The old Tufnell Park Dome no longer exists as far as running wrestling. So what does a Women's Super Strong Style look like? Is it going to be a two-day tournament? Heck, is it going to be like the old Revelation of Divine Love tournament where it's a one-night tournament? It's going to be tricky if it's going to be a 16-woman tournament. Or, and this is probably my guess, they just rebadge the old Natural Progression series and it's spread out across a series of shows. None of those, apart from a weekend, is really good optics when you come to think about it. You know, you've painted this as for Women's Super Strong Style. That comes with its own expectations. That comes with people expecting it to be a weekender. That comes with people expecting 16 entrants. Right now, yeah, people have done their fantasy booking. People have looked at their roster of 16 entrants. Progress, right now, don't regularly book 16 women on their cards. Same as Rev Pro. You know, Rev Pro used to do the Queen of the Ring tournament, and that was an 8-woman tournament, and you think the last one they've done was many years ago. In fact, you're going back to the July of 2022, shows which haven't really made VOD, and, you know, Rev Pro's Queen of the Ring stuff, you know, relegated to Huntingdon, a venue they no longer even run now, because whether it's the tournament or the shows in general, weren't really cracking more than 100 people in the gate. So again, Rev Pro Progress, you know, have treated their women's division historically different, but yeah, I just do not see what a 2026 Women's Strong Style looks like. If it's a weekender, it's going to probably show a few people up. You know, we're going to have 16 names, you'd expect. They're going to need a few imports in the way the landscape is. They couldn't really get real big-name imports for the men's tournament. So, you know, where exactly do they pull from for the women's tournament? Heck, Eve used to do the She-1 as a weekend. That now got reduced to a single-night show. We'll see, you know, what format it comes, but some people will have egg on their face when this comes to pass, whether it's the fantasy bookers, whether it's me, heck, whether it's Progress. I mean, they could surprise everyone and have this be a two-night weekender. They'll need a lot of help on the undercard, I would suspect, even to just match this year's tournament numbers, or do a lot of work building a women's division, which has kind of been centred around, you know, two or three people as of late. Time will tell. And one last gripe on Super Strong Style, as I've gone just over 12 minutes without even talking about matches, because let's be real here, this is on Triller TV, you can watch these back yourselves. You know, in terms of the bell-to-bell, there's all of a certain standard, but for me, the big takeaway is how the shows came across, and for me, the big negative of this show had to be for production. You know, Britta's commentary has not been great for best of times. And, you know, the commentary pairing on Progress these days is Ollie Spring, Warren Banks. And the quality there is just all over the place. There's something very Progress coded, heck, Britta's coded even, about commentary that just falls into the same cliches. Now, if it's one show where you have opening matches, mid-card, and big main event, you kind of hand wave, you know, for main event being screamy, near falls, oh my God, I can't believe he kicked out kind of stuff. But when you do this on a single elimination tournament, when you're doing the same people, three matches in one night, and every single match is go big or go home, it gets old fast. And heck, even some of the big story points. As I said earlier, a man like Dries bleached his hair blonde. He's calling himself a new gold standard because of the Shelton Benjamin match last year. That flew under the radar at points. I think it was one match, actually, the final against Leon. He hit Shelton's pay dirt move. Commentary completely whiffed it. Warren Banks had to pull that back onto track from there. It's like, when you hit your rut, where you hit your standard playbook, and you're just screaming, shouting because it's the thing to do, it's very easy to miss the story beats when you're trying to get someone over. It's like, people have complained for over years about progress commentary. Heck, during the pandemic, when it was Hustle Malone and Charles Crowley, people were very much on the fence. Back in the old days when it was Callum Leslie, Glenn Joseph, RJ Singh and that lot doing commentary, people absolutely crapped over it because you had Glenn Screams was the meme for a while. Callum very much rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way, for his progress historian stuff. And it just feels like Britray's commentary in general is at a very low level. And it's like, I get, Dave Bradshaw's commentating everything, and for me, it causes fatigue. If every other show you see over years is Dave Bradshaw, you kind of want to hear a different voice, whether he's great or not in your mind. I mean, heck, I've been watching wrestling for so long, I remember him the very early days of the FWA, or early 2000s FWA. What culture? Obviously, GWF in Germany, now WF Pro, WXW, a lot of small promotions as well. When you're all over the place, there's a reason for it. And I don't want to say, he's taking spots off folks, but when the best of the rest is the pits, you have to wonder, is it, what the direction? Like, I know WXW were doing a production seminar in June in Gelsenkirchen. Granted, people may not want to, may not be able to take the time to fly over there and take part in that. TNA's Tom Hanifan did one for UKPW last month over in Kent. And I'm not saying you have to take time off work, because let's be realistic, Britres, especially commentary and this kind of stuff, it's not a full-time gig. But if you're going to be doing this seriously, and especially for a promotion that has major eyeballs on it through historic reasons or where they actually are today, the kind of stuff that was being pumped out at Super Strong Style was an embarrassment. Sit, take the time out. If your house standard is every match is the greatest thing in sliced bread and every false finish has the same reaction, it's that whole thing of if everything's special, nothing special. And I'm guilty of it as well. I've done podcasts on and off for years. I've followed the same patterns, but I'm also not being paid. I'm also not being listened to or have the same attention of the same people, the same number of people who watch progress these days. And all I'll say is, if you are doing commentary or any kind of production stuff, pay attention to what everybody else is doing. If the best in the business are losing their mind at two count near falls in the opening match on the card, are they doing the same thing in the main event? If you don't have the same upper gear they do, maybe find your own way. And I'm not saying you have to go back to the old Kent Walton days of calling moves in a staid, news, old-timey newsreel fashion. But you can't have every match be the same. Like I said before, if everything's special, nothing's special. And that is something that a lot of the wrestling scene could learn to live with. Yeah, everyone wants to live in the moment. Everyone wants to make everything the thing, whether it gets clipped, whether it becomes, high-right real material. But at the same time, you've got to look at it from the point of people are actually watching, consuming this stuff. 4 hours that show was on Monday night. And by the end of 4 hours, I was tuning out those near falls because you just heard and seen so many of them. Elsewhere in production, and commentary is a big bugbear. It always has been with me for some reason. But I've made this complaint online in the past about Rev Pro. Their stuff for 229 lately. They seem to go for the in the darkness look, the spotlights look like you've chucked bags of flour on the black canvas. Progress this time looked to be taking a similar hint. Like, All the spotlights in the middle of the ring, anything spilled outside the ring. If the lads weren't wearing, you know, white wrist tape, you couldn't see them until they put a spotlight on them. And like, I kind of get it. You know, 229, you know, isn't really a wrestling venue, but Progress have been working at the ballroom for, you know, most of a decade now. So you've got to think, like, you know, people come and go. But if that's your main home, like, in Progress, don't, you know, travel other venues. Like, you know, Rev Pro do the 229, but they do York Hall, they do, you know, Stevenage, they do, you know, Sheffield. Progress is, the bulk of their shows is the Electric Ballroom. That building they should know, like, the back of their hand, both the layout and the, you know, technical stuff. Even if it's working with people at the venue. And if you've got a show that, you know, especially now, is streaming live worldwide to a wide audience, and you've got large swaths of that show where people can't see because it's in the crowd or because, you know, a camera angle picks up light differently. Again, take a step back and look. If you want to keep the old B-roll, you know, shoot the matches like it's old B-roll footage formula, fine. But make sure people can at least see it, because there's nothing worse than seeing a show where, you know, you're hearing commentary lose their goddamn mind, but the cameras just can't pick up a damn thing because there's no light being shone there. And tech, if you want one more red flag, you know, Progress bell to bell this week, you know, largely fine. The shoulder stuff, I mean, I'm not going to give publicity to morons. I'm sure those in the know have seen a photo of that fan showing off his WWE boxes. Look, back in the day, I used to be that guy who would hit F5 every, you know, fourth Monday, you know, when tickets went on sale, 12 o'clock, heart rate pounding. You know, tickets are on sale because I didn't have a Progress season ticket. I was, you know, doing what everyone else was, hammering F5 at, you know, 11:59 p.m. see if a ticket tailor link was working, getting front row. And then after Progress Wembley, I fell off. You know, since the pandemic, I've been to, I think, 2 Progress shows. That last one being 3 years ago, No Mountain High Enough, where they had, of course, with the Rex W lads in a super strong style qualifying match. But the magic of Progress, for me at least, is long gone. You know, you've got a situation now where you've got fans, and this isn't a shot at anyone in particular apart from that dickhead with the trunks, but you've got some fans who, you know, it's all about them. You know, if you're watching at home, the commentary is a huge turn-off. Heck, if you want to be even more petty, that goddamn conga line. Again, if everything's special, nothing special. Fans slapping the ring after every match. Again, if everything's special, nothing special. And look, I get it. The current generation of fan wants to be in the moment, especially this god-awful world we're living in now where, you know, let's be frank, everything's a shit show. But at the same time, I keep going back to this. Seems, you know, this may be the title of this episode, if everything's special, nothing special. But it just seems to me that people who got into wrestling, British wrestling, you know, after the pandemic, don't seem to know nor care about the past. And I'm not making this a speaking out kind of thing. If you want to go down that road, so be it. You know, 5 years next month. But for those who were around back in the day when Progress were hitting the heights, what we have today might have better wrestlers bell to bell, but the actual, you know, quality of the Progress package, it ain't what it was. And unfortunately, for various reasons, some of which we've covered, may well not be what it was ever again. And I guess if you need to make a comparison, 2025 Progress may as well be like WWE is in Britrace. You know, fans, you know, really popping for characters and entrances, but for the match, maybe not so much. And hey, going full circle. You know, a fella, someone has maybe dubbed Brit Rezuso because of, you know, the entrance is the big thing people remember. Those comparisons are not going to go away. And that was Progress Super Strong Style 16 without talking about any of the matches. Who knew? Vaguely staying on Progress, I guess they're super bad, horrible week if you want to be extra doom and gloom. Company's House in the UK purports different companies' balance sheets throughout the year. And wrestling companies are no exception. If they're registered, they have to report their bank account, not their bank accounts, but their company balances. And Progress and Rev Pro in the last couple of weeks did just that for the year ending July 2024. I'm not going to go through all the numbers because, look, I'm not a financial analyst. No, my analysis is very much like, I call it LeBar inspired. You know, number go down bad, number go up is good. But some of the people looking at those balance sheets of Progress are very much eye-watering. equity progress for the year ending July 2024, minus 606 grand, thanks in part to creditors due or debt of over £1 million, which, you know, Bridgewater has seen as pretty much unheard of, especially, you know, what progress in 2024 looks like. Compare that to the year ending July 2023, they were 313k in the red, with those debts being 461 grand, so almost tripling your debts in a year. Like, I'm not a financial analyst, I don't know, but I would love to know what the hell happened to make those figures spike like that, because, you know, it's not like they're doing worldwide tours. You know, it's not like the gates crashed or they've been spending, you know, visibly spending big sums of money, you would say. I mean, you know, we want to go back through the years, and, you know, people keep saying how, you know, when Progress was run by Jim, John and Glenn, they weren't doing bad, and they weren't, you know. But again, it's a different landscape. Pre-pandemic, they were very much in the black, so to speak, in terms of positive equity. And it's been since they've come out of the pandemic where those numbers have spiked. Now, whether that was Progress in 2022, 23, 24, not being what it was, and I don't want to say being a lemon, but in terms of just not having the outlets it had, or the money-generating outlets, you know, it says one thing. I mean, heck, this past weekend, Super Strong Style, speaking of folk, merchandising was pretty much bare bones. You had the Super Strong Style t-shirt, but apart from that, you know, you go on the Progress merch website today, and the only merchandise you can get are the generic Progress logo shirts in about six different colorways. Compare this to, you know, ye old days, where there's about three or four Progress shirts a year that people all jumped onto and bought. It's night and day. And like, if you watch the Triller TV streams, they have the adverts on, you know, for the Progress merch. Very little what they have in most trailers can you actually buy, which I think maybe is a sign of changing focus. But, you know, wrestling, a lot of money, it's like touring, a lot of money they make is through merchandise sales. And if you don't have merch to sell that people want to buy, it's hiding to nothing. And heck, if you want, you know, sake of fairness and comparison, you know, RevPro, their results came in as well. Their capital slash reserves of equity, as we call it, minus 34k for that same end of July 2024 period. That was an improvement, though. Looking to the year ending July 2023, they were 74 grand in the red in terms of equity. So, obviously, that first Copper Box show playing a huge part in dragging RevPro by the bootstraps and back towards, back out of deep water and towards more shallow water. And hopefully that trend continues, and hopefully Progress, you know, can reverse the course if, you know, very much the numbers are what they seem to be. A couple of quick hitters. So Super Strong Style wasn't the only tournament in European wrestling this past weekend. The German Wrestling Federation ran their World Cup tournament in the Festsaal Kreuzberg in Berlin. It's a tournament they've typically had before as a light heavyweight World Cup. This year they got rid of the weight class and they did the format of four first-round matches and an elimination four-way. Probably better way to go if you're doing it as a one-show thing. Certainly not getting sick to the back teeth of certain wrestlers, and you can kind of hide from it more, especially for carrying injuries or maybe not as good. Again, perception is in the eye of the beholder. But GW, of course, they don't promote everything beforehand. We had a pre-show match, a 3-on-3-on-3 Lucha Rules trios tag, Reika and the Gulyas brothers from Hungary against the Blutsbruder prospects of Jay Nero, D-Nice and Asgolar, against the trio of Amy Heartbeat, Orlando Silva and Paul Van Nima. A few complaints coming through this, as the show was going on, in fact. You had the women's champion Jay Nero there in a trios match with two of the women, rather than this title match. Like, it's not like they do big storylines, but the fact you have your women's champion in a four-way match like this. Heck, you even had Neem's one half of mixed tag champions. Sultan Suzu, the other half of the champions, not there. So again, it's just one of those, you know, whatever bodies seem to be there, get thrown to matches, it seems. As far as the World Cup portion of the show, again, was fine. Not too much sticking out on either end. Robbie X nearly getting the flag of Northern Ireland in the pre-show parade. I would say Robbie X's match with Joe Lando probably stood out the entire show. Axel Tischer against Raj Desivo, I had a perverse desire to watch this, and it kind of lived up to my expectations. You know, Desi taking the bulk of the match and then losing to a quick flurry from the Axeman at the end. Elsewhere, had Hua beating Itachi Pahar, but then getting pulled from the finals due to injury. Itachi replaced him, so that match pretty much for naught. I was expecting it being some kind of post-match thing with Hua attacking Tisha afterwards. They had gone down that pathway on the last GWF show, but that's not the case this time. Elsewhere on the show, we had a fast time, or as he's called here, Rotten Mudo, winning the GWF Berlin title from Rambo in a three-way, but also included Alex Silver, he of the old TNA gut check, if you've got memories that long. Big Nick and Tony Harting retaining with GWF tag titles over Crowchester and Nick Schreier. They're not a regular team, so first half of the year, GWF does the Mystery Mayhem gimmick where you win a match, you win an envelope, and it's kind of like the old TNA Face the Fired thing, where what you get, you know, depends on what envelope or briefcase you got, except they don't do the You're Fired gimmick, and you either get a title match, a world title match, a Berlin title match, or a tag title match, in this case, Crowchester and Nick Schreier, the wacky partners being thrown together for the tag titles coming up short here. Pascal Spalter won the title shot from Mystery Mayhem, and coming up short against Metahan. So, yeah, that's what we got there. GWF got a couple more shows this month. They're hitting Hanover on the 9th of May, Hamburg on the 17th, and Rostock on the 24th. Quick look over. Ticket sales are not looking too grand. But we are back in Berlin, June the 1st for Rising Heat. That one will be streaming live. No card yet for these, but yeah, probably worth keeping an eye on if you are a fan of free wrestling on the YouTubes. Before we check out, I want to run through a couple of quick results and upcoming shows. Haven't had a chance to see this show yet, but this past Friday was Eve's 15th anniversary show. That was at the Big Penny Social in Walthamstow. Main event saw Nightshade and Nina Samuels' 16-month run as the Eve World Champion. And we'll say, you know, with Nina, she lost the Eve title on the Friday night, the Progress Women's World title on the Sunday. Maybe we'll have to keep an eye on the rest of Nina's many belts because, you know, when you start losing them this quickly, it certainly attracts eyeballs. Erin Angel had her first Eve match in the year. She beat Abby Cartwright in 6 seconds. That was mostly to keep the Hey Someone from our first show was wrestling again here thing. Emerson Jane and Rio beat the Medusa Complex. And the Riot of Violent match we spoke of, was, I guess, like a Anakin Arena kind of thing, but on a smaller scale, had a bit of a tweak. Harley Hudson was over in America doing TNA Impact tapings. Been announced over the weekend she signed to them, or whatever deal she had previously has now been signed. So we ended up with Alexis Falcon returning to Eve, replacing her as the quartet of Anita Vaughn. Alexis Falcon, Sapphire Reed, and Lucy Sky beat Sky Smithson, Rain Leverkusen, Aluna, and Lucia Lee. Interestingly, after the match, Anita Vaughn chucked the Eve International title belt in the bin, so whether that means we're going to get rid of the belt entirely or bring a new design or what have you, we'll see in the weeks ahead. Elsewhere across the weekend, WXW ran in Papenburg for Wheel of Wrestling 69. This is up on Triller TV and literally just before recorded on the WXWnow.de streaming service on YouTube. Main story coming out of this was Alex Duke, one half of their tag team champions, going down with a shoulder injury. This was known before the show. Instead of stripping the belts, they've decided to put Duke's half of the titles on Anil Marek. So we've now got a makeshift tandem of Norman House and Anil Marek as tag champions, but somehow allowed to stand for now. Main event, Axel Tischer and Lawrence Roman's worth a watch if you've got Triller or WXW now. Alongside the surprise debut of a fellow called Alexander Bellamy, no relation to Craig or David, on the undercard in what was, I believe, his legitimate first match against Leah Bloom. And he looked pretty damn composed for it. And if this is match number one, the kid's got legs, but no, let's not put too much pressure on a debutante. OTT ran again this weekend. Now, this was the weekend they were meant to have run their Scrapping a Mania show. That fell through due to, ironically, things falling through in terms of unannounced matches and booking plans. So instead, they ran a show at the Ambassador Theatre in Dublin. A couple of takeaways there. We had Golden Boy Santos beating Charlie Sterling in 13 seconds to win the OTT European title. That ends Sterling 6 months from the belt. Sammy D and Trent Seven won the OTT tag titles. And I believe the next day they went up to Northern Ireland with Big Damo on the show. I think they'll also be hitting the OTT on-demand service if you're so inclined. Back in mainland Britain, or back in the United Kingdom, before I get myself cancelled there, Dios del Inframundo, formerly Drago of AAA, he was over for British Kingdom Pro in Oxford and Cardiff this past weekend. And another tidbit from the back end of April, Project Nova, a, I guess like a developmental promotion for the GWF, if not in name, certainly in spirit, I'd like to keep an eye on. Had Sorani beat Big Nick to win that Project Nova title in Berlin at Die Weiße Rose. There will be a rematch, I understand. Nick had been the champion of Nova since that belt came in February 2024. If you're interested, that'll be on the Project Nova YouTube channel and probably have a review of the match, if not the show, once it drops. Upcoming for the next few weeks and months, Progress's next two shows, after Super Strong Style, they tend to take a long gap off. So you're going to have to wait to June 29th for the O2 Ritz and Manchester show. Far from ordinary people, we don't have a card. Only thing we do know is Sunshine Machine will be defending their newly won Progress Tag Team titles. Progress then return to Camden on July 27th for a show called Stay Humble. Yeah, that's... I'm not going to touch that. But the first match announced is a Atlas title match with Axel Tischer defending against Mike DiVecchio in a tables match. And why? They did meet once before a year ago. That's not been referred to at all in the build so far. This match was meant to have happened in Las Vegas over WrestleMania weekend, but got canned because Axel had visa issues. So questions begged, why is this a tables match? Did someone see Mike D go through doors at the Clusterfuck Scramble Cage? Or is this just more milfoy stipulation stuff from Progress, because that tends to be their new thing of just laying steps on top of steps for no real good reason. Other stuff announced lately, RevPro announced another international show. They're debuting in France in October. October 26th at La Réunion and the outskirts of Lyon. It's in conjunction with the Lyon Wrestling Association, a promotion that at time of recording has run exactly one show. Of course, later this month, RevPro is running Barcelona for the second time, this time with Lucha Libre Rebellion. I think they did, was it Lucha Libre Barcelona last year, and then that promotion went under, so hopefully Rebellion doesn't go the same way. And of course, RevPro back in Berlin in August for a doubleheader of shows with the German Wrestling Federation. So yeah, Andy Q and the lads are certainly making use of their passports. Of course, long before that trip to Barcelona, RevPro is at the HME Empire in Coventry this Sunday, May 11th. They'll be streaming on RevProOnDemand.com. Announced so far, we have got the two final quarterfinals for the number one contenders tournament. That is an absolute mouthful. JJ Gale and Shaw Samuels is one match, TK Cooper and Leon Slater the other. Of course, winner of those two will face either Ricky Knight Jr. or Zazaya. We don't have a brackets for this yet, but... you know, down to the final four, and that of course will take place in Sheffield at the end of May. Elsewhere in the card, Luke Jacobs and Ethan Allen take on Xander Bryant and Leland Bryant. Chris Ridgeway takes on the eldest of the Bryant brothers, Nino. Liam Slater takes on Cameron Kai, and Zazaya rematches with Jay Joshua. Of course, not in the tournament, but Jay Joshua looking to get something back after narrowly losing via count out early in the month at 2-9 to the Spaniard. Incidentally, just before I hit record on this, Ichiban we spoke about on the last episode, they just announced their show this Sunday in Kingston on May 11th. This was postponed indefinitely due to unavoidable circumstances, or as we used to call it, cancelled. What had been announced for that show was a 2-3 falls match, Trent Seven against Leon Cage. We also had Medusa Complex against Emerson Jane and Danny Luna. Rio against Rain, Leverkusen and more, but hey, that's all up in the ether. So, yeah, a bunch of names looking for work this Sunday at very short notice. And being fair, not much in the way of shows with spots. So we'll see if maybe RevPro finds a couple of empty spots in Coventry this weekend. Saturday, May 10th, Wrestling Research and doing a show called Bardcore. This is the Lakeside Arts at the University of Nottingham now. Think of this as kind of like a gimmick show for some William Shakespeare stuff in there. I suspect it's not going to be the kind of grabs for a lot of people on this site, but hey, if you're in and around Nottingham, it's worth a trip. Certainly the one time I saw Wrestling Resurgence live was a hoot, and you know, it's, they have a very different roster to what you see up and down a lot of Britware, so if you're in the area, definitely worth making your way to. Next weekend, Attack Pro Wrestling are running in Penarthen, Wales at St. Cyrus School. A show called C'est la Vie, and I'm betting you can't tell who's in the main event here. Yep, Nixon Newell, she's, I'd say back, she's had a few matches in Attack, but she's main eventing here against Danny Luna, first time ever. Elsewhere, we've got Jay Joshua against James Ellis on this card, and the Attack tag titles are on the line with Harrison Bennett and Rain Leverkusen defending against Gabrielle Fuerza and Alexia Nicole from Canada. Following weekend, North Wrestling, they've got Let the Cannons Fly number 6. That's on Saturday, May 24th. From the Anarchy Brew in Newcastle, this is again live on Triller TV+. On the card so far, we've got Leon Slater, Liam Slater and Miles Kamen against a man like Reese, Kid Lykos 2 and Kemper. Charlie Evans against Lou Nixon in a death match for the North Ultraviolet title. Plus a match I've got an eye on, the Young Guns challenging the team of Rampage Brown and Will Cruz for the North tag titles. And then the following week, North go a little bit down the A1M to Leeds for their debut in the city at a show called Project North. This is the venue, the Project House. It'll also be on Triller and announced so far Gene Money against Miles Kamen. And hey, coming up to 40 minutes, that will do it for another quick episode. With the Euro Clutch, I don't really want to go too deep in the weeds with, you know, match recaps, because again, a lot of Brit Race, you know, it has the eyeballs it has. What people want to know is what's going on, you know, get brought up to date. And if anything, you know, really great happens, of course, we will scream from the rooftops, but a lot of this stuff you can see on Triller, you can see on, you know, Rev Pro On Demand, YouTube, you know, all these various platforms. It's just a lot going on, and a lot of stuff to try and catch up on when there's a lot of other wrestling going on in the world. I mean, heck, this weekend alone, New Japan, Noah, that's just in one country. Anyways, if you want to subscribe to us, of course, we are on YouTube, part of the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We also are available as a standalone feed on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Amazon Podcasts, pretty much anywhere you can find your podcasts. We are there, both on the VOW network feed and on our own. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Ian Wrestling there, at Euroclutch Pod for the podcast. And, you know, any angry DMs, send them to the Euroclutch Podcast one, because we'll read every single last one of them. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in a few weeks' time with some chat for WXW's Fan Appreciation Night, the latest steps of the RevPro Number One Contenders Tournament, and whatever comes out of the wacky world of European wrestling. Adios!
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.